would take out your Bibles and open up to 1 Kings chapter 11. Tonight I want to take some time and look at the stories of Rehoboam and Jeroboam. In the Old Testament, David has been king for about 40 years. He dies. Solomon comes on. He's king for about 40 years. And after Solomon, the tribes of Israel get split into 10 and 2. The tribe of Judah, which is the tribe that David's from, the tribe of Judah and Benjamin are going to go with Rehoboam. If you want an easy way to remember that, think of re means to do something again, to do it twice. Think of two tribes, kind of an easy way to remember it. The other 10, they end up with Jeroboam. And Rehoboam is the son of Solomon. As 1 Kings 11 comes on and you read down through it, it becomes perhaps one of the most sad chapters in the Old Testament. Here's Solomon, a man that was given all this wisdom, all this discernment, and then he turns away from it. He goes after these many wives that he has, and it's exactly the way that it talks about in Deuteronomy what would happen to these kings if they had multiple wives. God told them way back in Deuteronomy, you go after multiple wives and they're going to lead your heart astray. And that is exactly what happened to Saul, it's what happened to David, and it's also what happened to Solomon. Solomon's life is coming to a close. If you look in 1 Kings chapter 11, Jeroboam shows up. Now, he's of the tribe of Ephraim, so he's not necessarily any direct relationship with Solomon or with Rehoboam. But looking at verse 26, 1 Kings 11, 26, says, then Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, an Ephraimite of Zereda, says, Solomon's servant, whose mother's name was Zeruah, a widow, also rebelled against the king. Jeroboam comes in and he starts this big rebellion. Then verse 27 says, now this was the reason why he rebelled against the king. Solomon built the Milo, or the citadel, says, and closed up the breach of the city of his father David. He kind of starts to set, it talks about here the city of his father David, says he set up the city in a way that it was well protected and fortified where other people couldn't come in. And that just made Jeroboam upset. Then verse 28 says, now the man Jeroboam was a valiant warrior, and when Solomon saw that the young man was industrious, he appointed him over all the forced labor of the house of Joseph. So Solomon realizes, all right, Jeroboam's a valiant warrior, he's a strong man, he's industrious. That's the kind of guy we want to be over all of the forced labor. If you want to think of it in maybe a present day, he's going to be the president of the union. He's the one who's going to be in control. He's going to take care of things, make sure that they work the way they should. He gets appointed. Verse 29 says, it came about at that time when Jeroboam went out of Jerusalem that the prophet Ahijah the Shilonite found him on the road. Says, now Ahijah was clothed himself with a new cloak, and both of them were alone in the field. So here's Jeroboam, and here is also Ahijah, who's a prophet from God, and he has a message specifically for Jeroboam. Now, forgive me tonight. I know at some point I'm going to say Rehoboam instead of Jeroboam, but be merciful with me. Notice as it continues, verse 30. It says, then Ahijah took hold of the new cloak which is on him and tore it into 12 pieces. He said to Jeroboam, take for yourself 10 pieces, for thus says the Lord, the God of Israel. Behold, I will tear the kingdom out of the hand of Solomon and give you 10 tribes. But he will have one tribe for the sake of my servant David and for the sake of Jerusalem, the city which I have chosen from all the tribes of Israel. Verse 33. Says, because, now here's the reason why he's going to tear these 10 tribes out of the hands of Solomon and his descendants. Says, because they have forsaken me and have worshipped Ashtoreth, the goddess of the Sidonians, Cheshmoth, the god of Moab, and Milcom, the god of the sons of Ammon, and they have not walked in my ways, doing what is right in my sight, and observing my statutes and my ordinances, as his father David did. Here's the time where Ahijah brings the word of the Lord to Jeroboam, and he tells him, God is going to give you 10 of these tribes. They will be yours. And the reason that they're going to be given to you is because Solomon and some of his descendants, they're going after these foreign gods and these pagan gods. And that's why it's being torn from them. So Jeroboam has an opportunity at this point to take faith in what God's promised, knowing this is exactly what God said would happen. I don't have to worry about trying to make things happen. I can rely on faith. Now, word of this gets back to Solomon. Look down at verse 40. Here's Solomon's reaction. It says, Solomon sought therefore to put Jeroboam to death, But Jeroboam arose and fled to Egypt, to Shishak, king of Egypt, and he was in Egypt until the death of Solomon. Now, this is the same man that Solomon had put over his forced labor. And now Solomon says, I want to kill him. I want to destroy him. And so Jeroboam, he flees down to Egypt and stays there until Solomon dies. So here's Jeroboam. He's been given this prophecy about 10 of these tribes are going to be yours. Ahijah's already told him. He has an opportunity for faith. And if you're looking at the title of the lesson tonight, faith and wisdom, power or power and popularity. This is the faith part. Jeroboam is given an opportunity to take faith if he'll just trust what God has told him. Next comes Rehoboam. Look at the beginning of chapter 12. It says, then Rehoboam went to Shechem, for all Israel had come to Shechem to make him king. By the way, Solomon has just died in the previous three verses, in the last chapter. Verse 2. It says, now when Jeroboam the son of Nebat heard of it, he was living in Egypt, for he was yet in Egypt while he had fled from the presence of King Solomon. So Jeroboam is still down there. He's still waiting. He knows he can't come back to the land of Israel, land of Canaan, because Solomon would kill him, even though Solomon was an old man at that point. Then, verse 3, it says, then they sent and called him. It's interesting. It doesn't necessarily tell you who the they are. It just says somehow someone sent word down to him. It says, and Jeroboam and all the assembly of Israel came and spoke to Rehoboam, saying, your father made our yoke hard. Now therefore lighten the hard service of your father and his heavy yoke which he put on us, and we will serve you. Then he said to them, depart for 3 days, then return to me. So the people departed. It's interesting. After all these years, Jeroboam comes back, and as soon as Solomon is dead, he asks for some lighter service. Here he is. He had been the forced laborer captain, if you want to call it that, before. Now he comes back, and he says, all right, Rehoboam, now that you're king, we want you to change the way that you're doing things. And I want you to think about this for a moment. People talk about Solomon having all this great wisdom. He had had these people who had labored for him for most of his life, and he had taken them just right to the point where if he had given them just a little bit more, they were going to scatter all over the place. But he had them in a place where they were okay with working with what they had until a new king comes by the name of Rehoboam. So Jeroboam asks, he says, can we lighten the load? He says, your father made it so hard on us. And now Rehoboam has to take some time. He says, come back in 3 days. Let me think about it. And he has an opportunity here to decide whether to be foolish or rather to be wise. And look at what he does. Here's verse 6. King Rehoboam consulted with the elders who had served his father Solomon while he was still alive, saying, how do you counsel me to answer this people? To imagine that Solomon, who was just amazing to those that came to visit, maybe you remember the story of the Queen of Sheba, that she came up to see how Solomon really worked and how he did things. And she said when she showed up that, you know, I heard all these stories, but I really didn't even believe that it was true. She says, but now that I've seen it, it's 10 times greater than what anybody ever told me. And now, here's his counselors, here's the servants who helped Solomon. And Rehoboam goes to them first. And he wants to know, basically, what would you have told my dad if he asked you the same question? What would you have said to him if he came to you? Then the response comes in verse 7. It says, then they spoke to him, saying, if you will be a servant to this people today, and will serve them and grant them their petition and speak good words to them, then they will be your servants forever. He says, here's all it takes. As they gathered together, they said, Rehoboam, if you will just lighten the load, they will serve you all their lives. He says, that's all it's going to take. And so wisdom gets put before Rehoboam. And we'll come to find out here in a little bit, he doesn't care for wisdom. He wants something else instead. Look as it continues. Look at verse 8. But he forsook the counsel of the elders which they had given him and consulted with the young men who grew up with him and served him. So he said to them, what counsel do you give that we may answer this people who have spoken to me, saying, lighten the yoke with which your father put on us? he rallies around basically his own childhood buddies and friends. He says, you know, we grew up together. What do you think we should do? They're just as green as he is. And here's what they say. It says, the young men grew up with him, spoke to him, saying, thus you shall say to this people who spoke to you, saying, your father made our yoke heavy, now you make it lighter for us. But you shall speak to them, my little finger is thicker than my father's loins. Whereas my father loaded you with a heavy yoke, I will add to your yoke. My father disciplined you with whips, but I will discipline you with scorpions. He comes back more harsh, more extreme than his father had ever been. And his buddy said, you know, Rehoboam, you are making the right move here. This is exactly what you should do. I think you're on the right track. He said, you go tell them if they want to be in control, then they're in the wrong place. And all of a sudden, it turns to become all about power. And Rehoboam says, and his buddies tell him the same thing, go tell them, you think it was hard then? It's about to get hard. Go tell them, you thought that the whips were bad. Wait till you get stung by these scorpions whenever you lazy off. Well, look at what happens next. Verse 12. Then Jeroboam and all the people, Jeroboam being the president of the union here, and all the people came to Rehoboam on the third day as the king had directed, saying, return to me on the third day. Now notice, they do exactly what Rehoboam had told them to do. They don't come back on day two. It's the third day. We're going to come back. We're going to do exactly what you've told us to do. Then verse 13. The king answered the people harshly, for he forsook the advice of the elders which they had given him. And he spoke to them according to the advice of the young men, saying, my father made your yoke heavy, but I will add to your yoke. My father disciplined you with whips, but I will discipline you with scorpions. So the king did not listen to the people, for it was a turn of events from the Lord, that he might establish his word, which the Lord spoke through Ahijah the Shilonite to Jeroboam the son of Nebat. God knew Rehoboam wasn't going to take wisdom. He knew that he was going to take and choose to go after power instead. And so God laid it out there for him. And sure enough, he chose, I want to be iron-fisted. And then notice what happens next. Here are these people. Here are these workers. And without them, you're going to have to do all the work yourself. Verse 16. When all Israel saw that the king did not listen to them, the people answered the king, saying, what portion do we have in David? We have no inheritance in the son of Jesse. To your tents, O Israel. Now look after your own house, David. So Israel departed to their tents. They say, look, we have no stock in you. Of course, it's Rehoboam's grandfather that's David. He says, if David does well and his descendants do well, what's that got to do with us? If all you're going to do with us is make us work harder and discipline us in a more harsh way, he says, we're out of here. Forget it. It's over. And they all kind of leave, and you kind of imagine all the labor force taking off and just going home. Now, I want you to notice what happens next. Verse 17. But as for the sons of Israel who lived in the cities of Judah, Rehoboam reigned over them. The people of Judah, of course, that's the tribe that David's from, they say, you know, we kind of do have a little bit of stock in David. We'll stay and we'll work. Then, verse 18. Then King Rehoboam sent Adoram, who was over the forced labor. Now, Adoram is the guy that basically took Jeroboam's place as the president of the union. He sends Adoram back to say, all right, go tell them that this is the new way it is. Go lay it out, show them how powerful we are. Notice what happens to Adoram. And all Israel stoned him to death. And King Rehoboam made haste to mount his chariot to flee to Jerusalem. Where are all his high school buddies now? He sends a man to go out and say, hey, you go tell them how powerful we're going to be. And the people of Israel say, that's one dead Adoram right there. They just stone him. They don't ask any more questions. They don't say, well, are you sure we can't work this out? He comes out and he says, hey, this is the way Rehoboam said it's going to be, and that's the way it's going to be. And then he started ducking. I mean, it's over for him. Because Rehoboam decided, I'm not going to choose wisdom. I'm going to go after power. Sure enough, God took care of that. If you also notice, Before, we saw where Jeroboam was fleeing for his life from Solomon. Now Rehoboam's on the run. He jumps in his chariot and tries to get out of town just as fast as he can. As things continue, it comes about that there's a big rebellion against Judah. They break free, even down in verse 20. It says, it came about when all Israel heard that Jeroboam had returned, that they sent and called him to the assembly and made him king over all Israel. None but the tribe of Judah followed the house of David. Everybody gathers together around Jeroboam, just like what Ahijah had told him. It says, 10 tribes will be yours. And sure enough, it's exactly what happens. Then, it's already been split 10 and 2, just the way that Ahijah told Jeroboam that it would be. Next, Rehoboam decides it's time to gather all the warriors. They gather together all the 180,000 warriors to go out and to go battle against Rehoboam. And God tells them, don't do it. He says, Rehoboam, don't go out. He says, it's not about that. Don't go fight against your own brothers. And so, it's interesting enough, Rehoboam listens. He listens to what God tells him. He says, okay, fine, I won't do it. Then, next comes Jeroboam. He's got a pick. Excuse me. Next comes, as it goes on here with Jeroboam, he decides, well, what if people go back to the old ways? And so he has to decide, what could I do to be more popular? What can I do to make sure that these people don't kind of turn into deserters and go back to Jerusalem and go back to some allegiance to Rehoboam? And so look at what he comes up with. Here's verse 25. It says, then Jeroboam built Shechem in the hill country of Ephraim. Remember, he's an Ephraimite. That's where he's from. It says, and lived there. And he went out from there and built Phanuel. Jeroboam said in his heart, now the kingdom will return to the house of David. Jeroboam thinks it's all over. He says, everybody's going to go back. He says, if this people go up to offer sacrifices in the house of the Lord at Jerusalem, then the heart of this people will return to their Lord, even to Rehoboam, king of Judah, and they will kill me and return to Rehoboam, king of Judah. It seems that Jeroboam forgot about the prophecy. He forgot that God had already told him, look, 10 tribes are going to be under your control. You'll never have 12, but you'll always have 10. He even told him before, he says, all your days it'll be that way. But all of a sudden, he doesn't choose to work off of faith. He says, I got to do this thing all myself. He says, what can I do to make sure that these people rally around me and that they don't rally around everybody else? And so look at what he does. Verse 28. So the king consulted. I wonder who he consulted with. And made 2 golden calves. And he said to them, it is too much for you to go up to Jerusalem. Behold your gods, O Israel, that brought you up from the land of Egypt. He set one in Bethel and the other he put in Dan. Now there was a time when somebody raised up a golden calf when they came out of Egypt. And his name was Aaron. All the people said, hey, we need a God. Moses has been gone a long time. And Aaron did the exact same thing. He said, well, I had to find some way to get these people to rally together. And he got them to make a golden calf. He's the one who forged it out himself. And sure enough, God was angered by that. It ended up getting smushed down to a powder they had to drink out of the water. It's amazing that nobody even remembered that. You notice they said, well, you know, that's a far trip to go to Jerusalem. Don't be going that far. How about you just go to Bethel here? It's pretty close. You can go to Dan. It's a lot closer than Jerusalem is from here. He says, we'll make it easier. We'll make it more convenient. He says, that'll really gain some popularity. Just make it easier. Look at what else he does. Look at verse 30. It says, now this thing became a sin for the people went to worship before the one as far as Dan. And by the way, through the rest of the book of 1 Kings and 2 Kings, even into 1 Samuel and 2 Samuel, it's going to continue to go. People are going to follow in the sins of Jeroboam. It's going to be about idol worship. Not only does Jeroboam destroy this generation, but he destroys the generations to come after. All because he wouldn't choose faith or wisdom. Because he instead chooses popularity. Notice what happens next. Verse 31. That he made houses on high places. It's not about a temple to come together at. It says, and made priests from among all the people who were not the sons of Levi. It says, well, you know, over there in Jerusalem, they say that only the Levites can be the priests. But over here, hey, if you want to be a priest, be a priest. We don't have to worry about any holy standards. God's okay with that. Just make it whatever you want. I bet that made a lot of people happy. Man, I always wanted to be a priest, but I'm from the tribe of Asher. Hey, this is your kind of place. We'll accept you. It's okay. Next, verse 32. It says, Jeroboam instituted a feast in the eighth month on the 15th day of the month, like the feast which is in Judah. And he went up to the altar. Thus he did in Bethel, sacrificing to the calves which he had made. And he stationed in Bethel the priests of the high places which he had made. Then he went up to the altar which he had made in Bethel on the 15th day in the eighth month, even in the month which he had devised in his own heart. And he instituted a feast for the sons of Israel and went up to the altar to burn incense. He said, I'll make up my own feast day. Now, for the Israelites, the Day of Atonement was on the 10th day of the seventh month. Jeroboam says, hey, you got two places to choose from. Our big day is going to be in the eighth month. He says, just show up on the 15th day. It'll be great. What you see Jeroboam do is he lowers every standard. He says, you don't have to go to Jerusalem. You can go to Dan or Bethel. You don't have to be a Levite. Doesn't matter who you're from. He says, oh, you don't have to go on the seventh month. Come on the eighth month. It's real easy to be popular when you don't have any standards. When you don't set anything up to say, look, this is what God wants. It's easy to pull in the popularity. But he decided he wasn't going to work off of faith. He decided he wasn't going to go with, you know, God promised there would be 10. Throughout our days, throughout our weeks, we make millions of decisions. Some of them are very small and finite as to what shirt you're going to put on. Some of them are really big in the sense of, what are you going to do morally whenever you have to decide between wisdom and faith or popularity and power? You've seen through these two stories with Jeroboam and Rehoboam. Neither one of them made the right choices. Both of them failed. And actually, they failed miserably. Jeroboam had been told, hey, 10 are yours. Do what's right. He said, I'm afraid that they're going to leave me and go against the prophecy that God gave. Rehoboam said, I want power. God said, I want you to work off of wisdom. And he wouldn't do it. I want to show you something here, though. The decline of Israel had come in because Solomon had gone against what God said. It's perhaps one of the saddest parts of the story with Solomon. To imagine God giving you a special amount of wisdom only to see you turn away from it and to go in an opposite direction. Whenever he dies, he's built more temples for pagan gods than he ever did for Jehovah God. I want you to look back at the promise that God gave to Solomon. Look back in 1 Kings chapter 3. Solomon's been made king. He goes up on the high places because there's no temple to go and worship at. And he's offered up all these burnt offerings. And God asks him a question. He says, you ask of me what you want, and I will give it to you. All you have to do is ask. And Solomon had been instructed by David as to what he should ask before David died. It's kind of interesting. Solomon didn't come up with this all on his own. If you look down at verse 9, here's the way that Solomon responds. He says, so give your servant an understanding heart to judge your people, to discern between good and evil. For who is able to judge this great people of yours? He says, if you'll just give me understanding, if you'll give me a discerning heart, he says, then I'll be able to do it. But without that, I won't make it. He says, I'm still young. Then verse 10. Says, it was pleasing in the sight of the Lord that Solomon had asked this thing. Immediately that got God's attention. Then verse 11. God said to him, because you have asked this thing and have not asked for yourself long life, nor have asked for riches for yourself, nor have you asked for the life of your enemies, but have asked for yourself discernment to understand justice. Verse 12. Behold, I have done according to your words.
He says, "Behold, I have given you a wise and discerning heart, so that there has been no one like you before you, nor shall one like you arise after you as a king." He says, "I have also given you what you have not asked." He says, "Both riches and honor, so that there will not be any among the kings like you all your days." He says, you know, because you asked for a discerning heart, because you asked for an understanding heart, he says, not only will I give those things to you, I'll give you riches, I'll give you life, and he says, and I'll give you a name that's above others. Then in verse 14, here's the part that Solomon forgot. "If you walk in my ways, keeping my statutes and commandments, as your father David walked, then I will prolong your days." He says, if you'll remember me. And that is the one thing that Solomon forgot. It's interesting, through these stories of Jeroboam and Rehoboam, you see the choice of faith and wisdom or power and popularity. And God says, if you go after power and popularity, you won't get any of it. If you go after wisdom and faith, he says, I'll give those to you, and I'll give you some of the other too. But it's only because you're paying attention to what's right and because your standards are set where I want them to be. You can think through the New Testament. It talks about Jesus being the wisdom of God and the power of God. It talks about his death being that wisdom and power. It talks about whenever Jesus comes that his wisdom is far greater than any wisdom that Solomon brought. Because Jesus remembered the commandments of God, that's what made him powerful. It wasn't because here's this special thing. So what about us? There are times, from time to time, you have specific moments where we have to choose. And God's saying, go after faith and go after wisdom. The rest of the things will take care of itself. I want to close out in James chapter 1. Look over at James chapter 1, verse 5. Look at what God promises. In the first four verses, he talked about going through trials, having difficulties. He says, I'll carry you through. You hang on to me. He says, I'll perfect you to be just like my son if you'll just hold on with a good attitude. Take joy through them. Then comes verse 5. He says, but if any of you lacks wisdom, you ever had a time in your life where you lacked wisdom? Where you knew you needed more and you had to choose, how are you going to go about it? He says, let him ask of God who gives to all generously and without reproach, and it will be given to him. Notice God's attitude in giving wisdom. It's not, I'll give you just enough to where you make it. He says, I'm going to give you far more than what you need for the moment. He says, and I'm going to do it without reproach. I'm not going to look down my nose at you that you come asking for wisdom. He says, I'll continue to give it. And I'll be glad to give it to you. I won't be harsh with you. Then look at verse 6. But he must ask in faith. Notice that faith and wisdom go together. There has to be a faith in seeing the source of where this wisdom is coming from. He says, without any doubting, for the one who doubts is like the surf of the sea, driven and tossed by the wind. Asking in faith means, God, I'm going to rely on you to give it. I'm going to rely on you to dish it out and to give it to me at the right time. Not when I want it, but whenever you want to give it. And I'll wait for you. I'll dig into your word to find it. Then you notice, he says, for the one who doubts is like the surf of the sea. It says, driven and tossed by the wind. In the lives of Rehoboam and Jeroboam, do you see two men that got tossed around? Rehoboam said, hey, I'm going to rule this place. And within about 20 verses, he's riding in a chariot off away from town. Jeroboam says, hey, I'm going to make sure that I keep these people around me. Sure enough, they're around. They don't necessarily rally around him because he hasn't held to the commandments of God. It'll be the same way with us. Notice verse 7. He says, for that man ought not to expect that he will receive anything from the Lord. God didn't continue to bless Rehoboam. He didn't continue to bless Jeroboam. He didn't continue to bless Solomon either. And who would have thought he would have needed more wisdom? But he did. If you notice here, don't expect anything from the Lord if we're not going to seek him for wisdom and faith. Verse 8 says, being a double-minded man, unstable in all of his ways. If you want to know what instability looks like, don't work off of faith, don't work off of wisdom, and you'll have it. And you'll have it every day until you change your mind. God says, I need faith from you, and I need you to respond to wisdom that I give. Here's what he's offering. He's offering better than what David had. But so many times we throw faith and wisdom out the door and we end up looking like Solomon at the end instead of Solomon at the beginning, whenever he was ready to go after what God wanted from him. In Christ, we have access to the wisdom of God if we'll only put faith in the one who gives it, and knowing it doesn't come from anyone other than the Lord himself.